don't know that there's any dogs been decapitated by delivery drones yet, and I really hope that that figure stays at zero. I mean, our safety in the industry is only getting better, so let's hope that that's never something we see on a hazard identification workshop.
Yes, this week on Download This Show, it is drones versus dogs. Who shall reign supreme? And are you just a little bit too addicted to your mobile phone? Well, we've got all the tips on ways you can cut back and control your consumption, and why apparently taking the colour off your phone might help. All of that and much more coming up. This is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and welcome to Download This Show. Yes, indeed. It is Download This Show. And do you know what? I'm going to make you a promise. For the next 27 minutes and 30 seconds, this will be a federal politics-free zone. Partially because I'm recording this on Thursday and I don't know who the Prime Minister is. In the studio this week from CNET, we have Senior Editor Claire Riley.
Yep, I'm here. No one knows what's happening. Our country's broken, but I'm here and ready to talk about tech.
I've taken away their phones, though, so they can't find out anything. Who knows who'll be the Prime Minister at the end of this discussion. And alongside the wonderful Nick Healy, he is a writer, he's a journalist, he's a radio presenter. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
You look more tanned than usual.
Yeah, wintering in the northwest of Western Australia is not a winter.
Nick Healy is, of course, the breakfast presenter for ABC Northwest these days.
I am indeed.
All right, so something interesting's happened in the last year. The biggest tech companies in the world have begun falling over themselves to offer you a whole bunch of tools so you can keep track of and control and contain the amount of time you spend online. Now, what we're going to do over the next little while, before we get into the deep, dark, strange and magical world of drones, is I want to talk about all the different things you can do right now to control the amount of time you spend online, keeping it in a healthy zone. But before we get there, I want to understand why Apple, Google, these are massive companies that have profited from things like addiction to internet, which the veracity of which we will discuss, Nick Healy. But why now and why do they care so much about this, Claire Riley?
I think they have to care because people are starting to really turn on tech. Mm. It's quite interesting. You know, as part of our jobs, it's having a finger on the pulse of technology and talking to your friends. Do you care about this data breach? No, I don't. Or do you care about Cambridge Analytica? Yes, I do. And I really feel as though, anecdotally speaking, in the past year or so, there has been this pushback against Silicon Valley tech giants, and we're really seeing a turn. I think the really big part of that was Cambridge Analytica and recognizing how much of our lives on Facebook was really just open for all to see. Mm. And people sort of saying, oh, I do spend a lot of time on there, and it feels like it's not the closed room I thought it was. It feels like the back veranda door is this crappy screen door that's left wide open to the world.
Man, you got in early with the allegory.
Yeah, I did. I like to try and throw those things in.
That's good.
And I feel like things like Uber, you know, Uber had its terrible year last year and we sort of said, a tech giant saving everything in the way that we thought they were. And I think one of the really big sort of representations of this is phone addiction and how much we're using social media, how much we're using our phones. And a lot of regular people are actually kind of realizing, I am super addicted to this.
Yeah.
I tell myself that I'm not going to check it before I go to bed, but I check it three times. Or I say I'm not interested in that notification, but as soon as that little red dot pops up, I am on there quicker than you can say, you know, boo. People are recognizing that it's affecting their work, it's affecting their social lives, it's affecting their sleep. And I think tech companies are saying that they have to respond because if not, the tide could turn even more and they might find themselves up against a really sort of losing battle.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess the one observation I would make is that the Apple and Google have remained relatively clean in the Cambridge Analytica, the Uber annus horribilis. Do you reckon that's just them getting out ahead of the curve?
That's why they're doing it, because they're the clean, nice guys in this tech debate. So they're the ones that can say, if by getting in front of it, they're saying, we're helping you out. You know, we're Apple. We've got your best interests at heart. We're not the evil Facebooks or Twitters of this world.
We've got your best interests and we will make you pay for each and every one of those
Absolutely. And, you know, we are the ones that controlling those nasty apps on your phone. So we don't actually create the content. We're just the platform for you to consume it. So trust us to help you live your best wellness life.
There is a lot of we're being very socially responsible, aren't we? Watches being very socially responsible. It's very much supermarkets banning plastic bags in a bit of a way, that they feel like they're doing something. I think I agree with Claire. They are trying to get across ahead of the curve on this to a large degree. Because these are I mean, the tools they're offering, and I'm sure we'll get into that, are very similar to tools that have been available by third parties for quite a while. What they're just trying to do is bake it in.
Yeah, bring it all into one place so it's really easy for you. Whether people do it or not is another question.
Well, I'm personally of the view that if the technology exists and if the opportunity is there, people will pay more attention to what they're doing. I don't know about changing their behaviour. So both the new operating systems for Google Android and for Apple offer a whole bunch of native tools for tracking how long you spend staring at screens. I want to start with Apple because... I've got an iPhone, and that's what we're going to do. So iOS 12, which is currently in beta testing, I believe, in the public. Walk me through the different ways, Nick Healy, in which you can control, or at the very least, become mindful of your internet usage or your phone technology usage.
So, I mean, Apple offers a bit of a very Apple thing in that it's not very customizable what you can do with it, but there's a lot
classic
of data
Apple.
There. Yeah. So they let you know not only sort of how often you're opening apps, how long you're staying on apps. They'll even let you know how often you're picking up your phone, even just to have a look at it.
That's a figure no one wants to see.
No one wants to know that at all. In addition to that raw data that you can go and pass yourself, you can then set time limits on apps
where you'll get
a drop-down warning after you've used it for more than 2 hours, 30 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever you want. But it's also very easily dismissed.
What about the cumulative effect, right? Because I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter, as people will know from listening to this show.
Twitter, I'm sure, but yeah.
Yeah, but like I don't stay on Twitter for 2 hours. Like I open it, like, I'll be honest with you, when I'm in the bathroom or when I wake up or things like that. But I do it in short, sharp bursts, and I still think that's a little bit unhealthy.
Well, you could knock that down to 2 minutes in that case if you wanted to. But I reckon you spend more than 2 hours on Twitter a day. You just don't realise it because of how many times you do it in short little bursts.
And that's a really interesting question that I think some of this stuff doesn't quite get to. I know you're in the middle of chatting about the features and stuff, but I think the ability to see which app you're using a lot – yep, that's fantastic, but it doesn't really show you how much you're jumping around. And I think that's really interesting, and that's how our behaviour has changed. You know, the studies that say when you get notifications on your desktop, how many times your eyes are moving around the screen, how many times you're distracted in your workday. I wonder...
So you'd like to see almost more of a timeline
rather than that.
So, you know, in this 1 hour, you went from this to this to this. That's actually an interesting breakdown.
Because they say that, you know, the idea that we can multitask now and we're really effective at doing multiple things, it's not true.
I've forgotten that. Yeah.
We're all terrible. But we're not actually multitasking. If you think about the time it takes to gear your brain up to get into a topic, so it's writing the story that I'm going to write today, or even being across the unmitigated spew factory that is my Twitter feed, it takes my brain a moment to get into, I'm in Twitter mode now, okay, so I'm going to see a lot of fast hits.
It's not multitasking, it's task fragmenting.
Exactly. And it's jumping around, and you're not allowing yourself that warm up and cool down time. You're just jumping from leapfrogging around on all these different leapfrog pads.
Lily pads. Thank you. Traditionally.
No, you got there in the end. That's what counts.
And you're not actually spending a great deal of time or effective time in each place. So I'm really conscious of that, of saying, well, all right, if I'm going to be on Twitter, I am going to try not to do – this is easier said than done, by the way, because if we come to the point of let's talk about our own addictions, it's a very different matter. But if I'm on Instagram, I'm going to look through Instagram and, like, spend 5 minutes of just digital knitting, as a friend once called it, and just enjoy that and then go, cool, I'm back to my thing. Rather than just mindlessly scrolling through an Instagram feed, not really absorbing the things I'm looking at, and then jumping over to Twitter, seeing what's happening there, what's happening on Facebook, you're not really engaging with it. I sort of think, okay, use social media, but try and do your 10 minutes before your lunch break, or maybe 2 minutes at the top of the hour, just to kind of freshen off your brain and then go to the task.
I mean, I will say that scrolling through Instagram, I do absorb low self-esteem from all the CrossFit athletes I follow.
Absolutely.
So I can do that in under 10 minutes.
This comes back to something really important here. And I think it's something that psychologist Jocelyn Brewer has been talking about for a long time.
She's great.
Digital nutrition, she is. She's fantastic. Let's look at what you're absorbing. It's not just about the quantity, but what's the quality of the content?
And that's something this does not tackle.
It does not tell you. If you're spending 2 hours on Twitter checking up on Auspol for very important reasons, then great, good on you. If you're spending 2 hours on Twitter leafing through dog rates, That's probably good use of time. Good use of time as well. If you're on Instagram for 2 hours here, just going back through your ex-partner's feed to see what they've been up to, probably less healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really, really good point.
Depends. What if they're super successful and you're filled with fear and regret? I mean, that's
so that would be nothing wrong with that, is there? I think that's a really good point.
Maybe the best way to think about, and we will move on to the Android versions of this shortly, but I think maybe the best way of looking at these tools is as a starting point, is as a starting point to get you thinking about how you spend your time and having a quantifiable number here. So looking at the screenshots that have come through, you'll get a bar here that kind of breaks it down in terms of, you know, spent 14 minutes on entertainment, 2 minutes on games, 1 minute on social networking, 10 seconds on productivity, which I assume if you're doing productivity well is a good thing.
That's very productive.
Very productive. And I think
it's like cherry Pomodoro.
I think as a thing to look at, in the same way that looking at a pedometer on your wrist or closing the rings on your Apple Watch makes you think and be more mindful of how you are operating in a physical environment, maybe as a starting point, it's worthwhile. But I do take your point about the fact that it's only you know why you're spending so much time on things.
Yeah, I think that your point about my dad always says activity measured is activity changed. So if you want to see what you're eating, keep a food diary for a week and then you'll see how many times you're going for chocolate and then you'll see the corresponding lull in energy 2 hours later. I think it's so important. You can talk all these grand ideas. I think a lot of people just genuinely wouldn't realize how much they're using a particular social media app, for example, every day. You say that, you know, Twitter for you is a really quick couple of minutes, but if you got the report and it said, okay, over the last week I've lost 4 hours to Twitter, could I have been spending that time watching a great TV series, or, you know, is there a better way of spending my time? And I think it's a really great start.
What would you tweak? What would you change that would make it more effective?
I quite like Claire's idea of the timeline. So check it out hour by hour rather than sort of
every digital marketer would love to know that as well.
This is something I did want to get to, is this is actually incredibly valuable data that they are collecting. And I know we're jumping around a little bit, but they are getting some primo sweet data from
I'm never averse to jumping around to a conspiracy theory, Nick. You should know that.
There's no conspiracy theory on this. They just are.
Well, here's a question without notice. I mean, Apple have a pretty good track record in terms of keeping people's data, or at least being upfront about where they keep people's data. But do we have any indication of whether there's any agreements to share that breakdown with third parties? Have they been open about that yet?
I'm unsure because this is only in beta testing. But the other thing is,
it's a question to us maybe as it rolls out. Then,
do they need to share it with third parties? You know, if they know how you're using your HomePod and how you're using your iPhone and how you're using iTunes, and suddenly, you know, they own half of the ecosystem that you're using, maybe they don't need to share it with third parties. Maybe they can keep it part of this central profile. I mean, I feel like Apple has always locked that down pretty tight. Google maybe a little bit less so. Obviously, Google's built on advertising. But that said, Google has been pretty upfront with the way it uses things as well. So I think they would come under a lot of fire because this is starting to get into really quite personal information territory. You know, the way you use something, what interests you, what garners your attention. But then, you know, we hear all these theories, to jump in a bit of a sidebar, we hear all these theories about how gaze detection is going to be the next big thing. And that is literally watching where your eyes move around on, say, a screen. Are you spending a lot of time looking at that Netflix poster for this movie over that movie? I think that's a really personal thing because it's starting to get into the way we're thinking. And when our usage habits reflect our ways of thinking, that starts to get really personal.
Desktops, I was going to say. They used to be able to track mouse movement. And because you would naturally hover over something you were a bit interested in. So they've been sort of doing that very much similar to your gaze tracking, but using mouse movements for a while.
When we say gaze tracking, are we talking about what it sounds like, which is the camera's on long enough to see what your eyes are doing?
Mm-hmm. And essentially using biometric identifiers to be able to detect that your iris is looking at something. Maybe in the future, if I was to Black Mirror this, Mark, and let's all say that we want to see that happen.
Damn straight.
It would be things like, do you have an elevated heart rate when you're looking at a particular advertisement of the shirtless guy from Survivor or whatever the case may be? Are you lingering, your eyes lingering on that? Are you, you know, I'm more than willing to say that I see this being in our future, that the way we're moving, we're seeing these things brought in for security purposes, but those touch points, those pieces of data can be used by anyone realistically. And if you invent the technology to see where someone's eyes are moving so that they can type out a word on screen, say if you've got someone who is physically immobile, that technology could then be used for a totally other purpose. The technology exists. It's just the matter of whose hands you put it in.
We've already seen a lot of similar applications. Like, remember when, I can't think who it was now, possibly Samsung, one of their features was they wouldn't turn off, they would turn off the screen the minute they detected you weren't looking at it.
Yeah.
So that technology's been around for a while. And that's, you know, you're right, though, that sort of more minutiae of where on the screen, not just at the screen. Mm. It's coming.
Well, speaking about the Android version of this, coming with the Android 9 Pi, which is the new operating system, is a service called Digital Wellness, which is terrible.
It is.
Commit to it nonetheless, which offers something, at least based on the screenshots that people have been releasing. It looks very similar in terms of what they're offering. It has a ring which breaks down the percentage of your phone usage that has gone into things like very specific apps, Snapchat, Twitter, Chrome, Clock, etc. But in terms of what separates the two, is there anything that seems quite distinctively different about what the Android operating system is rolling
Not
out?
Not quite that I can see. There's probably a bit less data, as I understand it, than what iOS are giving you. But their time limits on the app seems a bit more efficient. It's actually quite hard to dismiss them.
Okay, right.
Whereas you can dismiss the iOS ones quite easily.
What are we talking about, like a full screen?
It's a full screen blackdown. You say you've reached your time limit.
And shut down.
On iOS, I understand there's just a let me keep watching more button. You're done.
It's like the snooze button.
Whereas on Android, you'll need to go into some settings and actually change them.
Mm. I think also I'm interested in Android's idea of turning off blue light at night. So that's a kind of it's called the wind down feature. And we all know that blue light, well, we may know that blue light is, you know, it disrupts your circadian rhythms because the idea is that when you wake up in the morning, you go outside and see the blue sky, it naturally wakes you up. But our phones are kind of spewing out this blue light that then keeps us awake at nighttime. So it kind of switches into this sort of more sepia tone.
Yeah, and actually colour is an interesting one, right? Because we have a mutual friend that has actually went through a period of turning her phone onto grayscale.
Mm.
And I'm still trying to wrap my head around how that theoretically helps control your relationship with technology.
So much. My phone was so boring. I can't emphasize this enough. So I did it for, I think, 2 weeks. Mm. And I did it around, I remember it was around Mardi Gras time, and life was just like, what's the point? It turned into like a Werner Herzog movie because I was just like taking photos of the sequins. I was like, there is no point. Nothing has color anymore. It became a little bleak. And it really did, you know, scrolling through Instagram in black and white is a little bit arty for a while. And then it's just much less interesting. You lose a lot of detail. Things like notifications, right? They're designed to be red because we associate red with warning, danger, excitement. Mm. So it switches on this really kind of primal thing in our brain to say, this is something over here, go check it out. Notifications don't really become that exciting when they're in kind of a gray version, a slightly darker gray than the other grays on your screen. I was using apps like Instagram and Facebook a lot less. I found that I was much less likely to linger on autoplay video because the color, the vibrancy wasn't there. My phone was just boring. I'd pick my phone up and then I'd be like, oh, that's right, it's boring. I don't want to do that. I'll flick it across the table.
Why only 2 weeks? What changed?
Because it was a challenge. It was like set yourself a challenge for 2 weeks. Okay. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, I was like, okay, I want my phone back. Please right. Just give me my phone. But it really did calm me down. And this friend says like, oh yeah, I periodically go back to grayscale just when I know that my behavior is getting a bit much. I'd said to myself, my phone is my alarm. So in the morning when I wake up, I'll turn off my alarm and it's so easy to be like, what's happening on Twitter while I wake up lying in bed. And I told myself that I wasn't going to do that anymore. And that lasted maybe a couple of days or a week, and I've gone back into it.
See, I think this brings me to something I wanted to talk about, this idea. And I think you and I talked about this like 4 years ago on this show.
Sounds about right.
The quantified self, which we talked about a lot back in the early days of fitness trackers.
Back when Apple Watches were just a mere glint in our eye.
Everything.
And now they're a dusting thing in my bag that I never put on.
Yeah, and did you charge it recently? No.
It's been months.
But we talked about this idea that data doesn't mean anything if you're not doing anything with it. And I'm worried that this is what's going to offer us a bunch of meaningless data that we then don't qualify or act on to change behaviours.
Well, no, but I would actually argue
with same as we did with fitness trackers. People were really worried about that.
Yeah, no. I think that's fair enough. But I would actually argue that it sort of comes back to the thing I was saying before, that if you as a user set it up and choose to use it, and it's a big if, right? Mm. If you care enough to actually open up this thing, then it should follow that it does impact at least the way you think about your behavior. But the big if is whether anyone cares.
Well, it's like a diet, right? You know, the really impossible diet is the one that you don't stick with, but the decision to maybe do 5-2, where you have low calorie days on 2 days a week, or maybe you do meat-free Mondays, something that's kind of livable. It yeah. feels like livable options with this kind of tech diet, putting yourself on a tech diet. They are the kinds of things that'll last. I didn't Grayscale was like the full vegan that I was like, this is not for me.
I have no energy.
But it was a good, it was a good recognition.
I don't know. I've seen people that did the 5-2 and on those 2 days, you do not want to work with them.
Yeah, right. But it was a good way of going, if we think about veganism, it's like, okay, I don't need to eat as much meat. I don't need to be on my phone as much. That grayscale period taught me some really valuable lessons. But I do still have Do Not Disturb set up at 10 o'clock and goes off at 7 a.m. So it means that, love you dearly, ABC, but gosh, you guys have some people that call me at 6 o'clock in the morning asking me to comment on something that's happened overnight in the US. I don't get those calls unless I'm up and awake and I've switched it off. And now at night, when it hits 10 o'clock, there's a little icon in the top of my screen and my favorites, like my husband can call me, but it's also a reminder of I go, oh, the icon's turned on. Can't be 10 o'clock. Oh, it's 10 o'clock. So I find myself actually changing my use based on that. And that's something really simple. And it's a feature that's rolling out in this bundled iOS, Android. It's going to be in those areas. It's a feature that's already existed.
Yeah. They're just making it a little more centralized.
I'm 100% setting that up on my machine.
It's really good. And you can also,
I'm also not even going to bother texting you until after 10 a.m. from here onwards either.
Yeah, 7 a.m. Like, wow.
7 a.m.
7 a.m., 10 p.m. And you can also. Okay.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, I think with iOS and with these new features, I think there's an option to turn it to grayscale when you're in Do Not Disturb.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be 10 o'clock, you pick up your phone to mindlessly Instagram, and then you go, why is my phone gray? Oh, it's my phone's telling me to calm my farm and just go
can
to bed.
Can I ask a really dumb question?
You can always ask a dumb question, Mark. That's what this show's about.
How do you know you're putting the right filters on the photo if the phone's in grayscale?
I didn't know, and it was a really big part of my Instagram learning process. I mean, I had some great photos, and I was just like checking, and then I'd get someone about like,
my face might be pink right now. Who knows?
Can you Heel see that this one
Clarendon
looks
10?
Yeah,
just make everything inkwell. Like, lean into the problem.
Absolutely. It was funny. It was a really weird experience. It's not something I'd do forever, but gosh, it was so valuable for recognizing my addictions.
So while we're talking about the idea of this might be able to relate back to early days of fitness trackers, let's flip that again, where we found people who became obsessed with quantifying their life, that it actually became a problem how much data they were tracking.
Yep. Classic internet, right?
Classic. Like, and it was a huge deal. So what's to say that in the drive to stop using apps and the internet as much as you are on your phone, you become obsessed with checking how little you're using your apps and your internet on
your
phone.
Look at how little I'm using it. I'm amazing. Oh my gosh, I've really shaved it down. Look at this timeline. Yeah. Stop it.
It's like when people announce on Facebook that they're leaving Facebook.
Love yeah.
It. I love it.
I get
much.
It. You know, like you're better than us. It's fine.
But look at us all just swimming around in this slurry pool of each other's germs. We're happy here.
Download the show is what you are listening to.
This is what you get with Lad Bible, as far as I can tell.
Mark Fennell is my name, and this is Download This Show. And if you are lucky enough to live near Canberra, you might be munching down right now on a bean burrito or even a headache tablet that has been delivered to your backyard by a drone, because the area of Tuggeranong just outside Canberra is a testbed for something called Project Wing. It's a trial to have delivery drones fly safely over people, complicated terrain, and also near airports as well. And this is just one of a huge number of drone projects underway in Australia right now. Apparently, we're actually world leaders in drone technology in things like farming, mining, search and rescue, natural disaster assessment. And my next guest, Dr. Catherine Ball, is a huge advocate for drone technology. She just organised the World of Drones conference in Brisbane, which is, as it says on the box, all about the business of drones. Dr. Catherine Ball, welcome to Download This Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Did you fly in on a drone? Did it deliver you to the ABC studios?
Not this week, but I have actually got, I'm in cahoots with a couple of companies to try and get them to do their trials and their testing here in Queensland. So ask me next year and I'll probably say yes.
Excellent. So could you give me, I guess, some examples, just lay out the land for me of some of the interesting things people are doing with it right now?
We see a lot of people, when I say the word drones, they either do think of the military version or they think of the little toy that you can buy from the high street that you can buzz over your neighbour's back garden and take pictures of them sunbathing and being an irritating neighbour, right?
Okay, these are all things I do on the weekend that I don't like to admit, but you know.
Naughty, not allowed. And so what we're looking at now is drones are being used to save lives using lifesavers. We've actually had a real rescue mission where a pod was dropped, an inflatable pod was dropped to two lads that were caught in a rip, and it actually rescued them out of the ocean, which was quite wonderful. But also we've got drones that are looking for people in terms of search and rescue. So there have actually been hikers and people that have got lost around the world where they've actually been found using drones. So if you get lost, either you can put your own drone up, I suppose, and sort of try and find someone and say, help, I'm lost. Or you can actually stay on a rocky outcrop and let people that are looking with drones come and find you faster, which I think is actually really great. And in fact, the Drones for Good phenomenon and the Drones for Good hashtag is something that humanitarian responders have been trying to let everyone know about for quite some time. So drones were used during the relief efforts after the Nepalese earthquake a few years ago. Here in Queensland, we certainly used drones to have a look after the Cyclone Debbie emergency response to see what roads were open, where the flooding was, what infrastructure was down. And if you think about it, they're a really inexpensive and easy eye in the sky to get you that initial information to react to something that's gone wrong.
So I'm actually flicking through the Project Wingworks website right now, and what they've sort of got is fascinating to look at, because it's they use a pulley system. So one of the biggest concerns you have with drones is the idea of it landing in the backyard and decapitating your dog, right? And so what they've actually got is the drone hovers at a certain height and a pulley system lowers what looks like a cardboard or plastic box with a wide base and a pointy end. So it sits, it'll inevitably sit flat where it lands, and they lower it down and it hits the ground. And so obviously it's a promotional video that I've got playing in the background here, and it does seem very good. But I guess my question is maybe something you might have a little bit more understanding about, which is how do you then use drones to deliver in places like apartments and building blocks? Has there been examples that you've seen around the world that provide a use case of how that could work?
We know this lowering something down on a chain is absolutely not new. Domino's Pizza, when they did their delivery trials in New Zealand, were also lowering the pizza down on a chain-like basket system. So that's actually nothing new. I mean, how do you get something off a drone? You either drop it with a parachute, drop it and let it go splat, or you lower it down on a chain. I don't know that there's any dogs been decapitated by delivery drones yet, and I really hope that figure stays at zero. I mean, our safety in the industry is only getting better, so let's hope that that's never something we see on a hazard identification workshop.
Dr. Catherine Ball there, here on Download This Show. And if you are interested in all things dronage, which is not a word, but let's all pretend that it is, they will be coming back with a new World of Drones next year. Very big thank you to our panellists this week. Nick Healy.
Thank you.
When can we hear you back on the air at ABC Northwest in Western Australia?
I am doing Drive as of next week for 1 week, so you can catch me statewide if you don't live in Perth. Otherwise, ABC Northwest Breakfast Show the week after that.
Boom. Claire Riley. We can hear you everywhere.
I live on the internet. I had a friend say to me the other morning, he's like, I've been listening to Download the Show on the way to work, so I already feel like I've spoken to you this morning. Bye.
People tell me that too. And I'm like, why? I feel like you're nicking me in person.
Yeah, it's great. Right. Thank you for having me. It's always such a delight to be here.
So if any of my friends listen to this, please still talk to me. I'm very lonely. My name is Mark Fennell, and if you did enjoy the show, do leave a review on whichever platform you happen to consume this fine, publicly funded content on. And with that, I shall leave you. Thank you for listening to another episode of Download This Show.